This is Jan Cox Talk number 1355, recorded on October 31st, 1994.
After many years of reading and study in a certain area, a man one day laid down the book in his hands, looked far away through his window, and thought, "In every land, in every tongue, and in every time are myths and parables regarding a warrior's need to die so as to make possible his rebirth on a higher plane. And this annihilation has been called by many names. The dying to one's illusions of existence, the dying to one's sense of separateness, the dying to one's knowledge of good and evil, the dying to one's distinctions between life and death, the dying to one's fear of death, and even the dying to oneself." His thoughts momentarily halted, and he attempted to look even further away, and finally returned to add, "What does it all essentially represent in unobvious areas of man's potential? Is it indeed a kind of actual death in older parts of one's intellect and a new birth in a younger one? That which life itself does, man can and will ultimately do also. But the standard execution is through man the collective and over infinite generations. The mystic is one in a hurry who wants to experience it individually." A father and son were out for a walk, and the boy said, "Last week I was laying in the yard looking up at the clouds, and they seemed to spell out a message. They appeared to say, 'A man with no heroes has no peers.' And the old man responded, 'Those were not clouds. That was a fragment of the unwritten history of man's mind.'" The simple like to say that a complex man is a miserable man. And they'll leave you a nice tip if you tell them that even the simple can be correct sometimes. I mean, sometimes you got to listen fast. But you knew that. The honorable life concept. All beasts live an honorable life, but having no mind, know it not. Man, now having and knowing, had to conceive of the concept thereof to allow him the possibility of living one otherwise. An older monk, after being questioned by a younger one, told it like this: "It is reasonable to picture our kind of mystical efforts as a journey, a trip to a place which, when you first hear it described, you're not sure you understand. But you are sure it somehow sounds closer to what's been gnawing on you than anything you've encountered before. So off you try and go. And after many years, one day you're suddenly there, internally arrived. And after that, there's never any doubt as to the correctness of your pursuit. But then after a day and a night, perhaps 2 days, the state begins to slowly slip away. And soon you find yourself, your consciousness, more or less back where you and everyone else normally live. But you have gained something singular. You now personally know and have experienced the actual destination, and have something new to use in your effort to return thereto. You now possess the method of methods, the weapon of weapons, to constantly strive, to continually remember, with ever-decreasing lapses, the stupendous joy, liberation, and exhilaration of the destination, until once again, you're there." When accused in his professional career as being an opportunist, he replied, "To stay alive is to be an opportunist." A man who had had some experience as an actor one day wondered, "Why is it so much easier to play being angry than it is intelligent?" Reminder: all of the grand, enduring, lionesque ideological structures began life as momentary adrenaline rushes in gazillion flanks. Lava, the father of all science. Rain, the mother of all art. Since the internals of a closed system can never see their position beyond its own inherent limitations, riders of carousels are left to surmise their supernatural origin. Ergo, ponder query. Do the outposts of lion consciousness sense the trace remainders of gazelle's sinews to be divine? And can you even conceive of it the other way around? One guy replayed his life in his head, even as he went along. Hello, one guy. Hello, Mr. Everybody. All mystical effort is an attempt to exercise control, but it differs from its perceived kin in that, with magic, men dream of gaining control of the forces they believe to run the external world, and in religion, they hope that ritual and sacrifice will appease the powers that do so govern life. But in the true mystical adventure, an individual seeks only the possible, the practical, and the personal. Control over the higher areas of his own neural awareness. The knowledge that is commonly available is but knowledge of the obvious, but no one seems to notice. If you stay concerned over the common human condition, you will yourself remain far too human and common. At the simpler level, external physical rituals are to wear the participants out in the hope that they may then experience something new and refreshing. Comparable activities, even at a more complex pitch, retain certain similarities. The opposite of neural liberation is theology, philosophy, and being old Mr. Potato Head. Could have predicted. One day, an elephant and an investment banker were talking, and the elephant said, "Although I am near your equal intellectually, compared to yours, my life is quite simple and unexciting, and I begin to suspect the reason being that I have but one aim in life." The banker had no idea what the elephant was talking about, suggesting that the pachyderm may have been overly optimistic in his initial assessment of the former's intelligence. One man began to picture his efforts to bring his attention under a new degree of control in naval military terms. As with an aircraft carrier, that you either stop from bobbing in the water or you clear its decks. More regarding the certain unseen justice of certain things. In the realm of the collective, men feel separate to their own detriment, while with the few, they reach for individuality and understanding to a different result. In his continuing attempt to maintain a non-routine relationship with his own intellectual processes, one man kept a running notebook of all the major problems and ideas that the collective found to be of specific immediate concern and made it a point of these to think of none. A mystical religious history update. Part of disciple's responsibility after the prophet's death is to make his life seem more interesting than it was. There's a whole new religion in there somewhere. For any of you tired of your present occupation and sanity. As all the little Kens and Barbies leave the garden plastics factory for life, a foreman by the door tells them, "Out there, if you have a heart, it'll be broken, but not necessarily so regarding the head." Enough said. One man told his son, "Look, if you have to have a hero, at least pick someone worthwhile, like your dog, Con, or your mother's climbing hibiscus, or some famous dead person no one's ever heard of." Once man had an intellect, it had to be fed, like everything else. And for him to embrace this new function fully, he had to perceive of differing qualities of neural nourishment, such as between instruction and education and mere entertainment and distraction, and even more specific distinctions within the major division, such as there being serious fiction and a frivolous variety, real science and a pseudo version, reliable history and a priori posturing. But hold on there, mystical scouts. Until a man realizes for himself that all commonly available mental fare is but diversion and distraction, and not intended otherwise, then he will never be able to personally divine an otherwise, should it be accessible. In a closed system, what men sense as evil is the ever-present odor of death being unceasingly reborn. Fabling update. Animals first decided who would be the smartest among them based on who made the least noise. And just look where that got them. Where was that man? Neuromedical news. Religion is the collective's antidote to mystical. In an attempt to rescue his friend, himself, from continual assaults and torture by some hard-to-identify force, the man considered several options. The first was to kill the provocateur and be done with it. But after many futile attempts, he turned to his next perceived possibility, to wound it so seriously that it would be permanently crippled, at least for his lifetime. But even that he found apparently improbable. He is now looking at some sort of holding action. Tip time. How to stay healthy. Always be sick tomorrow. How to stay stalwart. Schedule anger for next Thursday. The active struggle to control attention is an ambulatory form of passive meditation. There are not only buses to fit every budget, but also cars for every taste, and even private jets for those particularly in a hurry. A certain man concluded, for his own personal purposes, "As long as my friend remains dead, I will not soil his memory with routine thoughts and concerns." Though it goes normally without any particular notice, once men have an intellect fired and have become civilized, there must always be a feeling of us against them. There has always, it is an absolute inescapable reflection of the operations of the intellect in a 3D system powered by binary forces, etc., etc. But just as everything must be divided to be thought of, there is a feeling to varying degrees. It does not have to be necessarily hostile, aggressive, overt. It can be political, it can be religious, it can be social, it can be economic, it can be cultural, it can be racial, it can be anything you can think of. That about covers most of it. But it has to be a feeling of us against them. There has to be a feeling, now we're talking about ordinary people, which includes you. Because from the level down, we are all ordinary, from the level of consciousness down. And a man does not understand anything, to repeat myself, until you understand that civilization is simply another form of jungle warfare. That is, the divisions, such as us against them, if we were speaking in a religious sense, which men take to be of a higher form of division. And those saying us against them, whoever they may be, they consider it not only a higher form of division, but a proper form. That is, those who believe that they're pursuing a certain religion, as they were Christians and they believe that all non-Christians, it's us against the heathens of the world. It's not only the division is acceptable, it is proper, it is necessary to distinguish, or else there'd be no reason to be part of the former group. These divisions into everything, I guess, originally my on-site compilation, I left out nationalistic. But this feeling that there must be an operational, an important, a significant distinction between us and them, between us, whatever nationality, whatever race, whatever cultural, and somebody across the border, somebody across the world. It's us versus them. Whether it erupts in overt warfare or not, it's not important. It is intellectually we're speaking of. But do understand, in passing, what I was reminding you of, the ordinary man's perception that it is important to a higher degree. It is significant to on a higher plane to distinguish oneself religiously, for instance, than it would be if someone tried to compare, if someone pointed out that animals mark off territory and they will not infringe upon one another's territory with impunity, that a lion must be able, or a gazelle must be able to distinguish itself from a lion. Different packs of lions must be able to distinguish themselves in the markings. And if someone insinuated that that was very similar to the distinctions that people make between Christians and Jews, or Jews and Buddhists, or whoever, you understand that the people involved, the civilized, ordinary people, would take exception to that, as they should. But I'm assuming you people are getting a little bit better. It is simply an outgrowth. The beginning of all, if we're going to consider, for the sake of my verbal point at the moment, if we're going to consider that a feeling, a distinctive feeling between two groups of people based on religion, based upon their culture, if we're going to consider from an ordinary view that that is more significant than it is between two wolf packs, or between a pack of rams and a pack of moose over who's going to get the first feeding rights over certain, if you consider that the former is of some qualitative, has a qualitative difference between the former, then you do not understand anything. It is simply an outgrowth that it is, if you're going to, the civilized thoughts of all lands, the beginning of all their ideological structures began as gazelle flesh. It simply moves, and it moves within each creature, that the distinction between two groups religiously, culturally, nationalistically, the difference between that and just brutes, almost, if we could conceive of totally uncivilized people right now just fighting over little scraps of land and whatever tree had a little fruit on it, if you consider that the former is that far removed from the latter, then you're civilized. Leave it on a positive note. You are sane and civilized. The distinction is simply one of no particular significance once you see it. It then enters into areas that would be of more interest to us, or it should be, that there still lingers. It is still there, a feeling of us against them, and I'm saying us now generically, I'm not speaking about you and I, giving you credit. Of course, recalling the trap that the elephant apparently stepped in with the investment banker. But I will, until proven otherwise, I will be charitable and include you. That you and I are not playing us against them, but do note that there is that feeling that even when I stand here and talking, that on the best times when you feel like you are getting something and seeing into areas of life, or that your mind begins to, your consciousness begins to operate in a way that you don't even stop at the time and analyze it, but you are aware of the fact that this is out of the ordinary. That sounds safe enough. So on the basis of it being out of the ordinary, that you understand, if I stopped in the midst of you on a good roll some night and said, do you believe that your mother and father assuming that you had a decent relationship. And I said, do you think your mother and father ever thought about such as this? And you go, no, no. And I said, well, do you think the smartest rabbi or the smartest priest or the smartest philosopher in the world ever did? And at the time, you understand, no, no. No, this is it's a whole other ballgame. It's got nothing to do with education. It's got nothing to do with goodness. It has nothing to do with spirituality. You understand that it is, as far as you're concerned, a singular, isolated, individualistic activity. So in that sense, it is us against them. That is, this kind of awareness, this kind of thinking, ultimately this kind of consciousness, is us against them, because it is not standard. People do not just accidentally stumble into it, and it's not a matter, as now you should well perceive, it is not a matter that can simply be taught, much less that you could go out and say, all right, it is us against them, but why leave the other people out? There's some decent people out there that's not part of us. Let's go out and, by God, bring them in. Welcome them here into the fold. Show them the validity and the importance of what we're talking about, and any right-thinking person out there will immediately recognize it and just join right in. Realize that the vast majority of humanity at this moment, and it has always been so, are not serious thinkers. They are not philosophers. They do not analyze life. It is not anything out of the ordinary, but that is the fact. The vast, I stress to you, vast, vast majority of humanity at this moment, 1,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, they may be educated, they may be quite verbally glib, but they do not, they are not in any way deep thinkers. They are not, they do not have intellectual activity even approaching that of the clinical dictionary description of being a philosopher. We all know, but you should know it from the your own mechanical operations of your own cliche-ridden, motor-driven mind, that people, amongst ordinary people, they would deny that they never wax philosophical, because they would say, well, listen to me talk. You should have been there last night at the cocktail party. You should listen to me in the office around the water cooler. Or you should listen to people calling in to talk shows or discussions between politicians and reporters. They would say, ordinary man would say, that what I just pointed was demonstratively untrue, because he would say, listen to ordinary conversations amongst civilized people. Just go into an office around the water cooler and they'll be discussing the latest political activities of the president, of the local legislature, some warfare in other parts of the world that might drag us into it. And they will debate things about, should the Republicans win this time? Should they take, do you hope, are you going to vote Republican? Do you hope that so-and-so happens? Or do you hope that they gain control of the National Congress? And someone else will go, I don't know. I start thinking about the effect the last time that we had a Republican president, a more right-wing national leadership, and how it apparently tried to open up even the economy more so, and how it even widened the gap between the economic haves and the have-nots. And we're looking here in this office, just ordinary people standing around taking a short break, and then somebody else goes, well, did you know, I used to think some of that, but then I look at the more left-wing, the kind of democratic ideas throughout the world, especially our country, and I have to ask myself, well, imposing more and more regulatory government regulations, does that actually improve the economy? And those people go, hmm? The point of all that being that an ordinary man could make a very, very nice argument as to my density in saying that people do not think deeply. They do not do anything approaching philosophical, analytic thought. And there it is. Or if you don't like that, you know this. The airways, TV, and radio are just absolutely full of call-in and talk shows and interview shows. And other than the salaciousness, when they need to up the ad rates, other than that, which seems to be getting sort of worn out here, it is a kind of other level salaciousness to argue politics, and race, national interests, cultural clashes nowadays, that there seems to be people, whether you agree or not, that an ordinary mind would say that I was wrong in my observation that people do engage in some degree of philosophical thought, and they analyze what's going on, and actually want to talk about it to the point that they will call in to a stranger on the other side of the country on a radio show and talk about it. To make it quite simple, if you have anything resembling a spark of originality in the higher end of your nervous system, known as the brain, you know by now that that is not any sort of insightful. It's not supposed to be, but that is nothing approaching insightful thought. It just barely meets the clinical definition of intellectual activity. Well, it does. But that is all that's necessary for ordinary people. It operates at it just meets the minimal level, which is, I can describe to you easy, enough to make the tongue work. I guess I knew I'd get a laugh, but that wasn't the point. Well, I can expand it if you'd like it, just a little more comprehensive definition. The minimal degree of intellectual activity required for an ordinary person is enough to make his tongue work and keep his mind from going, In other words, for his mind to be blank. Because if his mind was blank, he'd be left with almost going crazy, having a mystical experience. Worse yet, seeing what's going on. It reminds me of a news item, if you recall, from 2 or 3 years ago. There was a man, his wife had to move to another city because of her job, I believe it was. And the old man was already complaining when they got there, because of the fact in this new place, they didn't have his favorite talk radio program. And she said, "Ah, shut up, you old fool. You brought your mind with you, didn't you?" It is simply a fact, you know, I'm not here to debate ordinary people's intelligence or talk shows or politics. But if you know anything, if you can even smell originality, if you haven't completely just used all this time as entertainment, you do realize that ordinary intellectual activity leads nowhere. It is not supposed to. The obvious point being, again, the obvious cannot be seen in this way. It is too obvious that if it led to conclusions, if it led to definitive answers, then why are we still in the condition we're in? And I don't mean that negatively. Why does ordinary humanity says we're no better off than we were? The only improvement we've made for a long time in your lifetime, if you recall, one of the classic ones was the only improvement we've made is we now have atomic bombs instead of spears. And many civilized, intellectual, educated people go, "How true, how true. My, my." That is not, there is nowhere to go with this. I cannot tell you, because it's not true, that ordinary people's observations, their discussions, are invalid. They're not invalid. They're not valid. It's noise. It's a verbal pissing on the ground, marking off territory. It is an interchange of energy between people. This cannot be made into a sermon or a hectoring of any value. You either realize that ordinary people, the president, the popes, everybody, you listen to them discuss and look very intelligent, and you don't have to laugh at them. Well, you don't have to laugh at them to no avail, because I assume all of you have mirrors in your bathroom over the sink. So, in case you're worried about the president and everybody else, when you see somebody look very, you know, the reporter says, "Well, Mr. President, how about so-and-so?" Or they ask the chairman of the Federal Reserve Commission, and here it is, you keep thinking, "How come I'm not rich? How come?" And they come out with some new figure, some new theory about economic affairs, and the reporter asks, and here this guy in a big old expensive suit, and whatever, he gets $200,000 or $300,000 a year, and he goes, "Well, it's my feeling that I and the council, based upon the statistics over which we have spent many hours, I must tell you, many, many hours over the preceding months, as to what to do to the best interest of everyone regarding the Fed's interference or lack thereof in the prime rate. And it sounds, I mean, here's the man that, if you're interested in such affairs, that you think here is supposed to be, here's the Pope of finances. And he has glasses and a nice, like I said, suit and a bigger salary than you. And he talks about what would be in the best interest of everyone and how much thought they give to this. In other words, it appears to be without any doubt, and if you're part of the ordinary scheme of things and happen to be interested in finances, you do play along. Now, you can listen to him and hope it's true, or you can look at him and go, I never did. He's a Republican. You can stick out your tongue. You understand, but that's the same thing. You can think, well, boy, that's good news. He's never lied. I'm in favor, especially of a more conservative head, which I know he's reported to be, of the Fed. Or you can say, that's the problem. That's the problem. The Republicans got in these conservative guys on the board, and we got to get rid of them. It doesn't matter. The thing is, you're playing along with it. You're part of it. And if you're a part of it, there is no way out. What he's saying is no solution to anything, but it's not intended to be. Or for some great social leader, some social critic to say, well, I can tell you the problems. Everyone's crying about crime. I'll tell you the problem. I'll tell you the problem exactly. It's lack of education. If we would go ahead and bite the bullet, if we'd go ahead and make the hard choices, if we'd go ahead and be prepared to stand for a needed tax increase and put the money where it belongs in education, quit fooling around here saying over money, wasteful programs and packing Congress up in private planes. Put it here in education. Education is what will stop crime. And you listen to it if you're interested in such as that. And you're, well, as I already pointed out, nobody's ever, I kept thinking my observation might just accidentally seep out and laugh. No one, at least on a large scale, has pointed out the proof of the remedial curative effects of education by pointing out that there is not one PhD on death row in this country. Well, I'm sure the statistics are even wider. That's a pretty narrow, although deep, but I was going to, there's probably not a PhD in a federal, well, there's probably not a PhD. I was going to try to come up with a figure. How about the number of PhDs arrested in this country annually for felonies? I'll bet it's not over 0.001%. Because I'm assuming it may be one. Especially maybe a doctor of literature went deranged. just suddenly flipped out and did something horrible. But you can just point out that the prisons just are 99% full of people. I'm sure it's figures like that 95% probably did not even finish high school. Disadvantaged intellectually. And so there's your proof. And it sounds as though it is a deep philosophical that somebody's given this great thought, not just maybe one person, but a whole government agency that they have spent. And they'll brag about it, that they've spent $10 million over the last 5 years with the Blue Ribbon, a commission doing a study. And they'll say, and here it is, and they'll present it and hold a press conference. The president will be there, and they'll all shake hands. But here's the point. If you're part of the ordinary structure of things, now you can laugh at it, but you understand in general you cannot go around laughing at civilization. You cannot turn it off even if you disagreed. And if you did, say, on a political, a partisan basis, that was Republicans in office doing this, and you thought the Republicans have never come with a good idea. I'm just making that up. You could dismiss it, but you cannot dismiss the collective efforts of civilized man. That is, you do not just, if you're an ordinary sane person, you do not dismiss the efforts of the government, which is sort of a secular god, but the collective wisdom and power of man in your local area. You do not dismiss their efforts that they spent thousands of hours, millions of dollars. And they list the people there, they stand up and introduce them. Each and every one has a PhD. Each and every one looks appear to be a decent person. They got nice suits. They're not your local neighborhood hoods. They're not drug dealers. They're people whose interest seems to be in the furtherment of society, the civilizing, educating. They're in favor of everyone doing better. And so they come out and they say, we'll give you a capsule review. Now the report runs well over 2,000 pages and they'll show it to it. Everybody will look, and the reporters write down, and the head of the commission will say, but I know we don't have time to go into the full synopsis of it, but I will give you a thumbnail sketch and point out what was probably widely suspected, we have the continuing problem of lack of sufficient, just minimal, operational education in this country. And we have done, we brought the research, the statistics even further up to date, and it is now approaching 97% of those people in our prisons nationwide, 97%, nearly 97%, do not have a high school education. And of that number, 85% of those are functionally illiterate. Anybody writes it down? If you think about that, and we'll assume that you are functionally literate and you have a reasonable job, and just think for a second, or let them push it and say, the man will look in the camera and say, well, think about this. It's easy for us to say, well, let's lock up all the criminals and let's be done with it. But think about it, my fellow citizens. Think about it. We studied the statistics, but you think about it. In this day and time, in this modern world, if you could not read, I am surprised that somebody can even live. How do they get back and forth? How can they go look for a job? They cannot read the paper. They cannot fill out a form. And the reporters write it down. If you're sitting there and you think, well, that makes sense. It's more than makes sense. It apparently is reflective, representative of considerable thought, study. Well, there's no doubt it's study. That you had not only the 12 members of the Blue Ribbon Committee, but they had a supporting staff of well over 200 people. They spent over whatever it was, over 6,000 man hours combined to put this report together, and they were all educated, well-intentioned people. So it must mean something. Well, let's get the cynicism out of even my shoulder shrug, because you know, as far as it meaning something, when they say, well, this means something, or the president will say, well, thank you so-and-so, or Dr. so-and-so for this, because I think now finally, the government and the Department of Education, well, got the Secretary of Education over here, I think this report will finally get this country moving in the right direction. And it sounds fine, except they had reports like that in Athens, in Samaria, in Shanghai, in Cairo, in Nairobi, in Morocco, in Rome, in Madrid. They've had, the point being, if you can take the sarcasm out, which is not due, but it's just for me to make the point if I have to, it is not deep thought. It is not a solution, of course, due to the real fact that there is no problem, but it's not a solution. It's not an answer. And in one sense, everyone knows it. But you understand, you have to play along. When the sign over the burgeoning city, the little settlement, said, we're born what we are. But for the city to grow, the sign had to go. I know that's the fifth or sixth time, but every time I pick up another one of you, there's another way to do it. Shortly after Ken and Barbie had to leave the plastics factory at the garden, things didn't seem to go right. And once they got a little civilized, so you don't know this, they came up with a report. They appointed a committee and got some of their relatives, and they came up with a report. And that first report was about what was wrong with life. Now, this was like after, some years, and they couldn't actually tell the people now that was civilization, the other people, wherever they came from. Ken and Barbie, Adam and Eve, couldn't tell them what the initial problem was. Maybe they were ashamed, maybe they forgot. But everyone knew, well, life's not going exactly right. And nobody ever seemed to notice that but humans, but that's another story. And so they individually, Adam would ask himself, Abel, Ken, Barbie, and they'd all go, well, do you know? And they'd all go off and they'd think, do I know what's wrong? No, no, no. And so it's like, well, collectively, I'm sure we'd come up with it. So they appointed, like I said, nobody knows the story. It amounted to, they didn't actually have the term Blue Ribbon Committee, but they appointed a committee. Some got together, and they came out with a report. And the report was basically what I just described, that the latest one is about what's wrong with civilization, that what we need is additional education. That's not the point. Even though you should find it interesting that there was such a report. That was long before the Old Testament, long before any of the known written records, this report. They brought the report back to the people. Adam, Eve, Ken, Barbie, Abraham, all of them was hanging around, and they heard the report. And they gave as good a showing as I just did for this contemporary one. The head of the committee gave the report, gave statistics, pointed out what appeared to be undeniable realities that education would certainly solve the problem. You understand, the same kind of report I just detailed that came out of Washington, the one I made up that could have happened this week. But in the original, the forerunner of all of these, they presented the report with the same kind of background, credentials, presentation, and all the people then of any importance, which was all the people, they listened to the report and they went, nah. You wasted all that time. You just wasted it. This is a different version of the sign over the city. They did that. And it was like everybody sort of broke up and wandered off, and everybody went out and had a smoke and went around Kick Rocks and went home for a while. And they realized that something had happened because they had invested up to that point about all of their psychic and intellectual resources, that because this was the first great collective effort of man to try and figure out that things are not right. And everybody on the planet went, yeah. It wasn't all that many people, but they all did get together. And they asked each other. You got to understand, back then, no one was a dope addict. No one was on drugs. Nobody was deranged. Well, they didn't have a definition. And so they were all decent, reasonable people. And they all got together, and they said, you know, is life right? Is things going right? And they all went, no. Nothing new, but they all went, no, and they didn't know. But they put together that first committee, and it came back with the first report, what's wrong and what would it take to cure it. Now follow it. You listen. Not all that much to analyze. You just have to see it. They brought that first report, and it apparently answered. It was almost undeniable. It was just, how can you say no? Like today, how can you say, oh, no, education, that's not going to help. How can you? No one can say that. Forget whether anything past that, but no one can go, oh, no, education is not going to help. After they point out that 97% of the people in prison do not even have a high school education, or 85% of those are functionally literate, and you're going to say it wouldn't help? You're going to tell me that it can't help? And you go, well, you're right. You know, it's got to help. The first report, the same one, they brought it back to the people, and they thought about it and went, nah. But now I've picked back the story where it was. They wandered off for a while. I won't be too specific, but for a while, reasonable length of time. And all of them began to be extremely concerned over their dismissal of it.
Yeah.
Each individual, they all go off and they thought, no. You know, something's even, we've now almost moved into a new level of something being wrongness. not just the original discomfort, discontent, but now it's like they had increased the irritation. They all got off, again, assuming that all of them, the X number of thousands of people then, were all sane, collective part of one society, and they knew that something was wrong of them having dismissed that. And yet they did know that it was worthy of dismissal. You understand? Because as soon as they heard it, they went, oh, that's not it. But then they wandered off. And it's, I must tell you, if you find this of some interest, they came to, now this is apparently, came to the conclusion individually. That's why I said they all kind of wandered off by themselves. Now, if this was an ordinary telling of history, I would fall into kind of mechanical traps and say, well, they went off and all of them began to feel a little uneasy, or some did, and they got together in little coffee clutches and began to think, you know, maybe we should reconsider, and they'd have little study groups and decide, maybe we should all call a huge meeting and start all over. No. They went off individually. And individually, back when we had this limited number of all sane, civilized people, the mother and father of all of our civilizations, they individually wandered off for a while. And they all came to the conclusion that even though I was proper in dismissing that report was not the answer to what seems to be our discomfort. We can't dismiss that.
No.
We did not do right by dismissing that unright report. And I assume that some of you by now understand it's not actually a report and people. It was the growing nervous system of man and what it had to deal with, what was possible for it, what it takes to furnish a closed system apartment. What's necessary? It gets into more things. What's available? What's necessary? What are the limitations? If you believe that you can take a closed system apartment, if you can take a 3D apartment and furnish it with even one four-dimensional object, you're a dreamer. Of course, you've actually got potential to be a mystic if you don't go crazy after that first try. The original group of humans on this planet, even though they realized that the first attempted answer, according to history, you may have already pieced this together, was not a report on the problem of education. From ordinary views of history, it was the beginnings of religion. But it was still that the group of humanity came up with a report. It was almost as though organically. I know anthropology and some history tries to pinpoint it in this way now, that it was almost very close to the same periods of time. I'm just using their terms and not commenting. That apparently civilizations and certain attitudes and certain religious myths just seemed to spontaneously sprout up all across the world at about the same time. Different languages, same basic stories over and over and over. And they try to make something out of that. But what's to be made out of it was it's like the initial reports. That was the beginning of recorded history, was this report that I just made up. I mean, that history I just told you about that nobody ever heard of them appointing a committee amongst themselves to try and figure out, since we individually, they all agreed. There was nobody rich, no one in a superior position. There was Adam and Eve, all the original people, first generation or two, still alive, and nobody's in a better position. There was no internal haggling. They just wanted what was best. And they all individually said, is anyone here satisfied? And they all said no. They said, well, and they all knew each other. They knew that nobody was off by themselves stealing from somebody else. There was no crime. There was no intrigue. Nothing untoward was going on. It was just this group of people who knew each other. They're all related, at least figuratively. But they all said, somebody said, tell me, are you satisfied with life? And it doesn't mean that they were suicidal. But they said, is anybody here satisfied with life? With your life, with life as it is? Would you raise your hand? And nobody did. And they could have cared a little further if you want me to do it. And they could say, well, do you think it's somebody's fault? Does any of you look around? We all know each other. But do you think it's their fault, your neighbor's fault, or your mother's fault, your daddy's fault? If you do, raise your hand. We'd like to know, because we've all agreed none of us seem to be satisfied. Do you think it's somebody's fault? Some human. Raise your hand. Nobody did. Now imagine. And they all had to, assuming they were all of more or less equal intelligence then, and whoever was the ad hoc leader of the little meeting went, isn't that curious that we know each other? We're not in armed conflict. We've all got something to eat. We've sort of settled down. We're raising families and crops. And none of us are satisfied. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's worthy of some further exploration, which was absolutely the intellect really getting going good. And they all went, yes. But now I understand. And so they had to come up with a report. That was the beginning of written history. It appears to be all sorts of things after the fact now, by ordinary minds, as I said, most of them look at as being the beginnings of mythology. It was the beginning. It was the first report. It was the first rejection of the report, but it only happened once. That's what I want you to understand, that as soon as the intellect rejected that first report, it wandered off. It didn't have to be a person. It was one guy's intellect wandered off in him, wandered away from the report. That is, the first report he heard about, well, here's what's wrong with life, and he heard it. So inside, now look at him as being this group of the founding fathers of civilization, at least it's his own, and it wanders off. And it thinks, well, I rejected that. I wasn't hostile. I didn't think they were wrong. I don't think it was a plot. But as soon as I heard it, I knew, well, that's not it. That's not why I am discontent. And so it wandered off in him. And it wandered around for a while, and it counted, did nursery rhymes, played jacks, whistled Stairway to Heaven until it went crazy. But all the time, it knew that something was kind of drawing it back to that point. And the point being, it realized I should not, and there was no word for this. It's why you can't find history, because I'm having to put words on it. It realized, the same as you want to go back to my made-up group of people, the people, tacitly, they didn't have to describe it. It was like after they wandered off for a while, after initially rejecting the report of their peers, their friends, of going, well, no, nice try, folks, but that's not it, is it? And they asked everyone who heard the report, is that it? And the truth is, even those who made the report. Now, at first they brought it, they did their best, but then the group, everybody else, they read it, they heard the report, and they said, well, the ad hoc leader, again, goes, I don't know why. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn, but I appreciate the effort, and each and every one of these people are friends and relatives and of mine, and I respect them, but I don't know why. Is it just me? I don't feel like that's it. And everybody went, me too. And just immediately after that, those who did the report, you understand? They may have wanted to hold their arm down, but they wanted to go, well, me either. And they actually, in the best effort, in good faith, that was their report. But even though, as soon as they heard, everyone else rejected. They go, that's not it. They realized, that's not it. So you understand? They broke up, wandered off. No hostility. Nobody got mad. The populace did not attack those who made the report, because I'm telling you that those who made the report in good faith, as soon as they saw that the populace went, ah, they immediately went, you're right. And they did it up until that point. They did it, and the best I can describe, you know what it means in ordinary parlance, in good faith. They gave it their best effort and presented it. And thought, well, we did our best, and they did. And the people, their friends and neighbors, the rest of the world heard it and went, they kind of looked, and one guy said, is it just me? Or, and everyone went, no, it ain't just you. Mm-hmm. You mean, you don't find that that's the answer either? And they went, no. And just shortly after that, those who did the report went, we knew that. Mm-hmm. I agree. And they wandered off. That was the first and last rejection of civilized reports. That was the first and last collective rejection of collective wisdom. It has to be. It does not solve the problem. It never answers the question, but you cannot reject it. It would be the destruction of civilization. It would be, even if you looked at the ordinary life of man intellectually, as a merry-go-round, round and around and around. Even if that be true, I assure you, if you're on it, you do not want to stop. Now, I don't mean figuratively. You don't know how to explain it, but you would die. That would be the end of you. So even in people here and there, that's one of the old aspects of historical and social criticism and just general routine smartassism is pointing out, well, life's not going anywhere. Look at the boobs of life. Look at the middle class. Look at the working stiff. They're not getting anywhere. You work real hard, get a lot of money, and then you die. And they think, boy, that's real philosophical insight. And that's many of the bohemians and would-be small-time street rebels in life. Well, I'm not going to play that game. And what they're saying, in a sense, is if people were as smart as I am, the rest of them, we'd get off this merry-go-round. You mean we'd just stop all this? Yeah, we'd just stop it. It is, in a sense, a kind of different kind of centrifugal force. It's only the movement of the merry-going around that keeps you alive, that keeps you on it. Because if it could stop, you'd be sorry if you're ordinary. Because you'd be dead. The ordinary intellect of man, collectively and individually, after that, could never again reject the reports of civilization, which amounts to whatever the collective wisdom is of the time. Notice tonight there was a man who said that in his attempt to keep up, to establish and to keep up some sort of non-routine relationship with his own intellectual processes, he kept a running notebook. You shouldn't. There's no form of sarcasm or anything in this. I'm just going to redo it for you. But he kept a running notebook of whatever the collective, that is his society, his civilization, the thinkers, the writers, but whatever the collective wisdom of his time, right today, whatever is the major concerns on this planet right now, if we started wars in such and such place, such and such political injustice in these countries, the inequities of the economic affairs and such, whatever it is, he kept a notebook and he kept it up to date. And of all of these concerns that everyone else found, that the majority, those people who run the world, apparently, Whatever it was that they considered to be of real concern, the problems and the ideas, not just the problems, that's no longer master, but the ideas, the theories, such as what would it take to cure it? And let's say that right now the prevailing one is that the main ills of our society would be ameliorated, at least, by greater education across the board for everyone. That is, let's say, a prevailing idea. Whatever it is, he keeps a running notebook so that he can be sure of all these ideas. He thinks of none. You understand? Not argue. Because if he was that good, he knew that whatever the idea is coming out of Washington or anywhere, such as a report on education, he knows it's not going to work as far as solving whatever's supposed to be the problems of life. So if he was smart enough to know that, he's not going to argue with it. It's not that he's going to go, well, now I'm going to reject whatever ordinary people think. I slipped that one in a few nights ago, if you recall, that I said from a certain view, from a certain level, what the ordinary think could be seen, what collective wisdom could be seen as, is oftentimes the opposite of the truth, which is a crude way of starting it. But now it's expanded. Because what the ordinary believe is not the opposite of the truth. But notice, he didn't argue. He just, whatever it was that are the prevailing, the ordinary, the decent, the civilized, the collective thinking of man right now, what they consider to be the specific problems and ideas, possible solutions. He kept up to date. So he kept a list so that he could specifically think of none of them. What kind of fish would it be that would swim around and apparently start off with a certain kind of some freedom in life, and before it's over, get so smart that he can fashion a hook and put in his mouth and go... Now that's all for tonight.
That concludes this talk. Be sure to visit us at jancox.com, where you can search through 3,000 talks for topics of interest, or just leave us a message.